kids are really, really receptive. And a lot of adults have been too, but there are some people who go, oh, I don't think Manitou Springs Garden Club is really my flavor. But most people feel really welcomed, and then they really just get to learn about why is Becky Elder so against this thing. And then they learn about it and they go, oh, that's actually a good point.
Next on Peak Environment.
You're listening to Studio 8 and 9 Podcasts, the cure for common apathy and indifference. Reported side effects include a sense of being informed and engaged. Ask your doctor if Studio 809 is right for you.
Welcome to another episode of Peak Environment, a Studio 809 community podcast in the Pikes Peak region about environmental integrity and stewardship. I'm your host today, Allie Richardson from Pikes Peak Permaculture. Pikes Peak Permaculture is an educational 501c3 nonprofit that's been serving our region here in Southern Colorado since 2002 in the nature and ways of permaculture design. Permaculture is a way of designing systems that work with nature, not against it. It's rooted in three core ethics and a set of guiding principles that help us design resilient, regenerative solutions in any climate, which strengthens our connection to the land and all who live here, restoring our soil, our water, and our food systems, and ensuring this region can thrive for generations. We work with community members, schools, and many other organizations to further promote permaculture design for the Pikes Peak region and beyond. To learn more about our programs, visit pikespeakpermaculture.org. And for conversations like this one, explore other episodes of Peak Environment at studio809podcast.com. Today in the studio, I have the best little garden club in the west side of Colorado Springs, the Manitou Springs Garden Club. And in this episode, we're going to be talking about many of the efforts that they have been doing in the region for many, many years. I'm joined here by Rachel Vanskoy, Becky Elder, and Jeannie Taylor, who are all members of the Garden Club. And I'd like for them to have an opportunity to introduce themselves to you today. Would you like to go first, Becky?
I'll start first. Yeah, my name's Becky Elder. I'm the executive director of Pikes Peak Permaculture. But in relations to the Garden Club, I started gardening in 1995 as a professional, and I joined the Garden Club because it was my local community group of gardeners. I started in the Master Gardener program at the same time, 1995. And I have just hung with the club ever since because I find it's a nice outreach into the community, and it's all about plants, which is something that I love, and a really great group of people. Very forgiving group of people. We have novices and the, hey, I just moved here from Nevada people. And then we have master gardeners, and we're beginning to acquire quite a few permaculture designers.
Thanks, Becky.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jeannie Taylor, and we moved to Colorado Springs, or to right outside of Manitou, in 2010. And after teaching middle school for 32 years in Houston, I'm one of those people who moved somewhere and thought, I need a garden club to tell me how to grow anything here because it is very different from where I came from. And Becky is one of the first people I met in the garden club. Actually, before I even joined the garden club, I had heard of Becky Elder. She is the reason that so many people in the garden club have taken permaculture design over the years. So I joined the garden club in probably 2011. And took the permaculture design class in 2013 and have been active in the garden club ever since with all of our projects, our plant sales. And I now teach a class or two in the permaculture design course. And I also studied herbal medicine since I moved here. And I teach a class in Valerie Blankenship's herbal medicine course. And the class that I teach is called Growing Your Own Food and Medicine. And I teach that in my backyard.
Thanks, Jeannie.
Hi, Rachel Vanskoy. I am a high school science teacher, not of 32 years yet. And I am a newer member to the Manitou Springs Garden Club, but not that new. I joined probably in 2020. Great year, great memories. And I took the permaculture design course upon moving to Manitou in 2018 because it seemed like it would be a more affordable choice than hiring a landscaper, and I didn't want to hire a landscaper anyway. And I figured, well, I've spent a lifetime killing plants. Maybe it'd be helpful if I learned how to grow them instead. So I took the course, and what was so special was that it set my paradigm. Instead of changing my paradigm, it literally set it from the ground up. And really, since it's permaculture, it's in the ground too. So it's informed how I teach. It's informed how I teach science and how I just teach anything, since it's a design deal. I just finished a 3-year stint of being the president of the Garden Club because I have a voice that projects well, and I'm funny. So yeah, really happy to be here with these two living legends that I learned so much from in 2018 and then beyond. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you, Rachel, for being here.
She's so kind.
And funny.
And funny.
Well, let's just get into a little bit of background about Manitou Springs. I know you guys just mentioned a few things in your introduction, but when did it first begin, Manitou Springs Garden Club?
Well, it started in 1993, I do know that, and by a group of maybe 10 local gardeners. And I think they all had a sense of community anyway, but they built on that. We started having a plant sale. We needed to raise money, so it's like, let's have a plant sale. And then what are you going to do with all this money? Well, let's give it back to the community. So that's kind of been a pillar of the Garden Club. And we are part of the National Federation of Garden Clubs, which for years, we went through, are we in or are we out? Are we in or are we out? Because there was people said, we don't want them telling us what to do out of Denver. Well, they don't really do that. We always opted to stay because they had great national programs like the birdhouses and the penny pines of restoring forests that burn or that, you know, just need to be afforestation is where you plant a forest where there was not a forest before. So anyway, we stuck with it on that. Over the years in Manitou, we've given so much back to the community, and we've had projects like the Community Garden and Mansions Park. Mm-hmm. At first, it was a flower garden because we were in there. We were all Broadmoor gardeners. I mean, the main pillars that, yeah, we can garden here. And so we did this really inappropriate flower garden behind there and then let the city maintain it, which they proceeded to overwater, which proceeded to make it just a big cone flower garden.
Lovely.
And from there, we changed it again to a food garden, community food garden. It's like the most affordable food garden in the area. And so things like that. And so people now, they know about us and they know that we're involved in good things. The most current project we have right now is a pollinator garden on a forgotten piece of land where a house burned down and was not able to be rebuilt, and it's just a weed patch, and now it's going to be a native pollinator garden with permaculture techniques in it in cooperation with the city. So us working with the city is what permaculture would call an edge, an overlap between us and our rules and our goals and the city and their rules and their goals. So it's a nice agreement.
Thanks for that. Yeah, and I was looking at you have a Facebook page?
Yes.
Where people can come and find out about your programs and projects?
Yes, I'm the admin for the Facebook page, and we do a lot of advertising for our plant sale. That's what we'll be doing moving into the spring. If we're having a speaker, I like to, if I know about it in time, I put that up on our Facebook page. Our meetings are free and open to the public. We meet at the Community Congregational Church in Manitou from September through May, and we park and enter at the back. And one of the nice things about membership is our best meetings are actually in the summer, June, July, August, and September. And we don't advertise those to the public because we go to each other's homes and private gardens and sometimes on field trips, and we don't necessarily want to advertise somebody's address on our Facebook page. But a lot of what we learn by example. So you go to somebody's house and you see what they have done and you understand why they've done it and you're impressed with it and you see, oh, I can do that too. It gives you a great idea for what's possible in this area.
Yeah. No, it's a wonderful a creative think tank while you're doing something else, but you just, you get exposure. Yeah, it's huge.
Right, right.
It's been very helpful.
Yeah, and the examples of going to other people who are doing similar efforts that you're doing is probably very impactful, too. And you get to eat what they're growing, I'm sure.
Yes, yes. I know when I've had it at my house, I always like to serve something that came from the garden.
Jeannie and John are the only people who make beans that I really enjoy eating. And they do something magical with it. I'm still trying to figure out that, but I do get to see how they grow it.
Yeah.
I think it's under a tight patent or copyright.
No, that's John. John is
I know,
cook.
John is
John
a
is
master.
The cook for at least the beans, yes. Yes.
Tell him good job, again.
And Becky talked about our plant sale. I joined the garden club, I think, in 2011, and I saw a flyer for the plant sale, and that was my first encounter with the garden club, showing up at the plant sale and asking when the next meeting was. And I didn't know a single soul in the garden club. And 1 year later, I was president, so be forewarned. Rachel had the same experience.
But Jeannie came to my aid, and so did Becky, and yeah. So did many people. It was delightful. A little overwhelming, but good in the end, yeah.
So our plant sale has evolved over the years, as has the local community. We used to buy about $1,000 worth of perennials, double the price, and sell them. And we used to buy about $1,000 worth of annuals, double the price, and sell them. And then the place that we bought our annuals from changed what they grew, and they started to just grow marijuana. So that kind of wasn't an option for our plant sale at that time. It still, I guess, is not.
Would have been a fun sale.
So
low key.
I suggested at the time, I said, we're gardeners. Why don't we grow some of these plants ourselves? We don't have any upfront costs with that. I mean, I've got perennials that come up all over my yard. Things spread. We have people growing peach trees and apricot trees from fruit pits and things like that. And so we started with a small table. It was before 2020. I'm not exactly sure when, but sometime maybe about 2015 or 2016, we were still buying the perennials. And we started with a homegrown table. And that has really taken off. And by 2020, we were almost entirely homegrown plants. Our perennials, our annuals, things like that. Different people in the garden club grow different things. I've always called it a hot mess plant sale because people say, well, what are you going to have? I'm like, I'm not really sure.
Show up and find out.
Yeah, when it shows up, we'll let you know. We even try to keep a database, but, you know, if somebody doesn't report what they're growing, oh, well, it still shows up at the sale. We have one woman who is dedicated to growing tomatoes for us and grows 200 to 300 tomatoes and lots of peppers every year. I have become obsessed with propagating fruit bushes like service berries, elderberries, things like that at the sale. We do supplement now some of the plants that we grow ourselves with a trip. We take a trip in April down to Elm Avenue Nursery in Canyon City, buy some tiny little annuals and some perennials, and we're going to up-pot those at our April meeting. And that way they have a month and a half to grow out before the sale. And so we try to have a modicum of control over the sale. And that's kind of our insurance in case, you know, you never know what might happen, a hailstorm. 1 year we had a foot of snow the day before our plant sale. That's the only time I've known that we actually had to move it because it's very hard to sell tomatoes when it's 33 degrees outside with a foot of snow on the ground.
And your sale is taking place in a parking lot.
Yes, so we have had our sale for the last few years and just got confirmation that we can again in the Manitou Pool parking lot along the sidewalk. That way people can park. You don't really have to come all the way into Manitou. We're right there by the highway. You know, so it's kind of an exciting thing. Our plant sale is really based on the concept of the gift economy. And I love this idea of the gift economy. I think I heard about it in some of my readings about permaculture. But a gift economy is when you give something with no expectation of return. So we grow our plants. Members buy a lot of their own soil, sent their own seeds. A lot of us save our seeds. So we grow these plants. I have like over 50 plants in my yard that I've overwintered that I'm hoping are still going to be alive to go to the sale. And then we give them to the garden club to sell. So that is our gift to the garden club, and we don't expect anything back from those plants that we give away. then people come to our plant sale and they purchase those plants, and we give that money back to the community in the form of grants. So it's all a circle that comes back into the community. We're community members. We are focused a lot on food-producing plants and pollinators, although we do sell some annuals and some houseplants and things like that. We sell what shows up at the sale. And we usually do pretty good, and we're mostly sold out by the end of the sale.
Oh, yeah.
And then how many garden club members do you have currently right now?
That's a great question. Helena would know the answer better. However, I would say we have anywhere from 30 to 35.
Wow.
Though,
that's great.
Yeah, and typically we'll get 12 to 18 that would show up during the course of the year for meetings. But even some of the ones that are not necessarily meeting goers, they're active in other ways. I think of Jason as a great example. Mm-hmm. Wonderful gardener in the area. He talks about when he has ultra hot peppers, which will be making their debut at the plant sale this spring. But he's active in the gardening community. He always reaches out. It's a way to network. But also, he's not really a meeting guy. So we love getting together once a month, but we have different ways that people take part.
Right. Some people show up and help with a plant sale
that
we don't see
otherwise.
Yeah, most of the year, but they're there. They'll come. Sometimes they grow plants for us. Sometimes they'll just come and work the sale. It's really good to have the people who grew the plants to be at the sale, because you can ask them about the care and what the plant needs.
I actually have something to add to that. My first time going to the plant sale, I believe we had been in Manitou. Like, it was that summer that I was taking the permaculture designs course, which was also our first summer that we were there. And I remember, that would have been 2018, I remember that there were all of these women in colorful floral aprons and hats and maybe a guy or two. And there was one small homegrown table, and I was intrigued by it. So it's fun to hear that actually may have been the first year that actually showed up, because I remember it was so much bigger the years after that. And then I joined the club, a couple of years after that.
It was just such a revolutionary idea. We're gardeners. Why aren't we growing these plants? Why are we spending all this money to buy plants when we can just grow them ourselves? And by the way, this is really important. Our plant sale this year is May the 24th, Sunday, 9 to noon, at the Manitou Pool parking lot. And if it snows that day, we'll see you a week later.
Thank you very much. Yeah, we'll repeat that three more times during the course.
And you all have been doing this, I was reading too, since 1994. So that's a very long time for a plant sale to continue every year.
We have a lot of great support from the Manitou community. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people wonder, do we need to advertise, all over the place and everything else? And we are not a huge, huge plant sale. And I quit stressing out about that a long time ago, especially not always knowing what's going to show up at the sale. I'm like, if 200 plants show up at the sale, then we're going to sell 200 plants. I'm not going to worry about it. But we do sell out of a lot of our plants. I think the community has come to rely on us for buying a lot of their tomatoes as opposed to going to buy them at a big box store. The plants that we are growing ourselves are acclimated to the altitude. Mm-hmm. Many of us save our own seeds, or these are cuttings or clippings that were cloned from local plants that are already producing. It's interesting because I propagate a lot of small shrubs from cuttings. And they bloom so much earlier than a plant that has grown from seed, because it doesn't know it's a baby. It was like separated from the rest of the bush and now has roots. And it's like, well, I'm just going to keep on going. I would have bloomed anyway if I'd still been on the mother plant. And some of the things grow from seed. We also have some unique things. One of the things I've focused on the last few years are service berries. All these box stores and places sell blueberry bushes every spring. Blueberries do not grow in Colorado. We have alkaline soil. I've even tried to grow them in a pot and have had no success, even when I have total control over the soil.
I only know one person who has moved from Colorado who could grow blueberries here.
Yeah.
Everybody else has been like, oh, that was a fun and expensive experiment.
Yes. And service berries, however, are native. We saw them first when we were on a trip up to... Montana and some of the mountain areas up there. They're a great favorite food of grizzly bears. I'm sure our bears here would love them too. But they're used all over Denver as landscaping plants. They have beautiful orange fall foliage, little white clusters of berries, and they make a nice crop of a small little sweet berry. You know, we talked earlier about what we had for breakfast. Well, I had a piece of sourdough bread with peanut butter with my serviceberry preserves on top of it. You know, just that's been one of my goals since taking the permaculture design class. We went on a field trip out to Westcliff to see this house where they had done all these amazing things. And the woman who lived there said, I eat something that I grow every day. And that became my goal. I knew that I couldn't grow everything that we eat. I don't have a cow. I actually have a tiny little grain field, but I could probably bake a muffin. But
small victories.
Right. But I'm sure that we eat 10 to 15 items of food that we grow from our little garden right there every single day.
That's wonderful. Well, to your point, Jeannie, like the ability, knowing that what you're getting, if it starts down from Elm Avenue and then it's tended by us because we know what it needs here, they don't have neonic in any of their stuff. We trust their nursery to make sure that things are, they're going to be set up for regeneration as opposed to for aesthetics, but possibly trouble down the line. Or what we have, it's adapted. Your Mayer lemon tree, I don't have the best window. It doesn't get the best light, so it's very slow to grow. And for a while there, I was like, oh, this little buddy's not going to make it. And it would not have made it if it was something from a big box store. But it knew enough of what was going on. It didn't die. Remember I told you maybe like 8 months ago? I don't think it's going to. It's alive. It's got little nubs on the side of it going, I'm not dead yet. I feel happy. So it's slow going. And I might not have the right setup, in which case I will find somebody who has the right setup and the right amount of sun. But I love how much hardier those plants are that show up to our hot mess plant sale.
Yes.
It's optimistic. And one, the great thing about gardeners is that in a world that can sometimes feel a little jealous or feel a little nitpicky, like gardeners just want everybody to succeed. Jeannie over here regularly shares seeds with her neighbors because, in her words, if there's some sort of apocalypse, I don't want to be the only person growing food on my block.
Well, and the other reason I do it is because so many people in our area spray Roundup on everything, mm-hmm. people all around me. So if I find that one of my neighbors is receptive to possibly a free serviceberry, a free rhubarb plant, I'm happy to give it to them because I think if I can get them to grow a little bit of food, they may be a little less likely to spray poison all over their yard. Mm-hmm. So it's a subtle way to build community. So go ahead, Becky.
Well, it's a great way to build community, to pass that along. I was really shocked this year that I found out just recently that one of my main suppliers that I've used for years, I've been a landscaper for over 30 years, and they just said, well, yeah, we use neonic in the wintertime. And I could not believe it. And I had been dealing with these people forever. And so, you know, oh, yeah, they're just putting fertilizer in. You got to ask. Yeah. You got
to
ask now.
I
found there's a major supplier here in our area now, and we are not going to buy from them if it comes up, who uses neonic in the fall, all through the winter. And he goes, oh, yeah, it'll be gone by spring. And I'm going, no, that's not the way neonic work. But here is a professional grower for the industry that thinks neonic are just fine to use.
Well, the bees come out all fall and winter too. Mm-hmm. When they're warm days, the bees are out. We were beekeepers for about 5 years, but we also gave that up because our bees kept dying. There are a lot of stressors here in this community, but pesticide use is a big one.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no control over the people on the other side of my fence.
Yeah, we're at such war with the dandelions, yet that's the very first source for our honeybees and our wild bees.
Mm-hmm. Right. Wild dandelions.
Right. And the maple trees, too. The maple trees are already blooming right now, and that is one of the first sources of food for bees. And luckily, they're big enough that most people can't spray them, thank goodness.
As a member coming into the garden club, who people who are participating selling these plants, is that a guideline that you have, making sure that they're not using inorganic or spraying, because of, you know, that plant, once you put it into your yard, it does still hold that.
That's a good question. It's interesting. As a club, we have things that we encourage. We have a whole mix of gardeners, and you know, we're not in exactly the same mind of thinking, and there are different paradigms that we're like, hey, we're all in this together, and other paradigms where we go, and you can't truly stop somebody. I mean, everybody's invited to the club, including people who killed things for decades and now are starting on a new foot.
That just meant you were on your way to being a good gardener.
Exactly. Right? No, I was taking the crash course in the first part. And but it is difficult. You know, we have had some people go, you know, this just really isn't my flavor. I just want to grow pretty things. And the paradigm of, yes, but What is the chain reaction? What is seven steps down along the way? What's cause and effect? Which is great because, you know, as a science teacher, I get to teach all about it. And they, you know, they take it in. They're really, I mean, kids are really, really receptive. And a lot of adults have been too. But there are some people who go, oh, I don't think Manitou Springs Garden Club is really my flavor. But most people feel really welcomed. And then they really just get to learn about why is Becky Elder so against this thing, and then they learn about it and they go, oh, that's actually a good point.
The Garden Club has been very instrumental in getting Manitou to go organic with their landscaping practices.
Right.
So
yes.
There's no
yes
doubt among the members how, if there are people who are pro-pesticide in our garden club, they're very quiet.
I'm
making an assumption that we're not putting anything on our plants. We talk so much about not using pesticides. And even I don't use store-bought chemicals to fertilize my plants either.
No.
I make my own fertilizer. I've always said I don't believe in the $50 tomato. I don't believe you have to go out and buy a $20 bag of dirt. You have to buy a nice fancy pot. You have to go buy a bag of seeds. Then you have to buy fertilizer, and you have to buy pest control, all that you can get, 10 artificially pumped up tomatoes from your plant. Most of us save our seeds, especially for tomatoes. There's some things I don't save seeds for because they crossbreed with other things. But We build a lot of our own soil. That's one of the most important things I think we've learned in permaculture. We talked about the permaculture ethics recently. The new class just started, and earth care means caring for the soil. And I love the idea of building soil because I feel like, I'm sequestering carbon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my husband and I started, before we moved to Colorado, when we lived in Houston, we were leaf thieves. And so we prowl the neighborhood in a truck, and when people put out their leaves, we steal them. I'm sure they're glad that we're taking them away, but I've been doing that for years. And shredded paper, junk mail, paper towel, toilet paper rolls, cardboard, all of these things are going into the soil, and they're staying out of landfills. And so I love it. And the fall and the winter are great times for building up your gardens and building soil, and we talk about a lot of techniques to do that. Somebody asked me a couple of years ago, it was April, and she said, what are you doing right now to get your gardens ready for planting? And I just looked at her and I said, nothing.
Yeah, no.
I started that in November, sorry about that, but, you know, and talked to her about what I did. And Al was building the garden. I mean, I was already planting in April. In fact, I planted my peas yesterday. I made my last Facebook post yesterday.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, spring, game on. We got this inch of water last week. We've been dry as a bone all winter. It's been the warmest winter I've ever experienced since I've been here. Stuff is, if it's not already bursting into bloom, it's about to. My garlic is up. Mm-hmm. Everything's crazy. And yes, we might get a late freeze, and it might harm it all. But in the meantime, you work with nature. The forecast said we were going to get rain and snow today, and we have. We've gotten 3 to 5 inches of snow right outside the winter. So I soaked my peas overnight Wednesday night and made sure I had them in the ground yesterday. I sprinkled mustard green seeds out on the ground. I've already got lettuce coming up under the snow, larkspurs coming up under the snow. It's time. Gardening is like, in the springtime, you hear this little voice, it's too soon. And then 1 week it goes, it's too late.
It's like avocado ripeness.
Yeah.
Or like bananas.
Avocado ripeness. I love that. You know, so the spring is just kind of a guessing game. And one thing, if you do save your own seeds, you tend to have a lot of seeds, so it really doesn't bother me if I throw out a handful this week and a couple of weeks from now, okay, they got killed in a hard freeze. Yeah. I've got another batch that's on
another
its
round.
Way. Yeah.
Right.
But gardeners, I mean, really, when you switch your paradigm, gardeners are going based off cues, not dates.
Right.
Yes. Dates are construction, but cues, that's the rhythm. And it's good to
yes.
get in sync with it.
And it's good to keep a gardening journal. I started doing that because I was able to go look up. I have religiously planted peas on St. Patrick's Day for years.
Shouldn't do it this year.
No. Well, unless the ground was covered with snow or frozen.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I was forced to wait. Well, last year I went and found, when did I plant peas last year? Because we had a warm winter last year, too. And I planted them on March the 9th. And so this year I thought, it's even warmer than it was last year. And my peas did fine. I mean, the worst that happens is they die. I replant them. That has never happened to me. And the best thing that happens is I get peas 2 weeks earlier than I would have a couple of years ago. Yeah, so win-win. You know, I'm already harvesting from the garden. Green onions are up. Multiplying onions are up. I have a coal frame, 2 hoop houses that I've kept alive all winter long with 0 electricity.
Right.
They get covered underneath the plastic with frost cloth and sheets and stuff if we get down below 20. But pretty much they're alive. Yesterday I harvested a beautiful beet with beet greens all over it. We've had Swiss chard and lettuce and mache, which is a really low-to-the-ground, hearty winter salad green, all winter long.
Isn't mache like Auroch? It's better in this climate than spinach because you don't need the cold shoulder season, or
possibly. I don't have a lot of luck with spinach. I grow spinach,
yeah,
and I get a week or two of growth out of it, and then it seems
bolts.
To bolt right
yeah.
away. So instead of spinach, I grow Swiss chard.
Mm-hmm.
Swiss chard loves it here. Mache, I've never cooked.
Oh, okay.
So I just use it raw.
Yeah.
In salads. If somebody didn't tell you it wasn't lettuce, I don't think you would know it. And it doesn't get bitter like lettuce does. Lettuce will start getting bitter when it gets ready to bolt.
Gotcha.
See, these are the type of things that you can ask when you come to the garden club.
That's right. And that's why I joined the garden club. I actually went. I had all these plants growing in the house, you know, never lived in Colorado before. I joined the landscaping committee in my little community, and they're like, well, pull up the weeds. I'm like, I don't know which ones are the weeds. And argued with these people about it who knew which ones were the weeds. But I would go to the garden clubs with little sprigs of things and ask Becky and Mary Ellen, what is this? Sometimes they didn't know, but most of the time they did.
Mm-hmm. Can't know everything.
No.
So let me circle back to the funding. You had mentioned the funding that you receive as the garden club goes back into the community. So not only are you giving an opportunity for people to get locally adapted, which was important that you said, locally adapted plants, but what are you doing with the funding that's going back into the community?
Oh, wow, that's a big bouquet. We get requests from people in the community. We've helped local churches. We've helped the local food pantry.
Flying Pig Farm,
Pikes yeah. Peak Permaculture. Oh, here's a story. Back in 2002, when I took my first permaculture course, I was a single mom running my landscaping business, had 2 teenagers, and it's like, I've got to go to this, you know, it's like a calling. I knew when I saw it that that was for me. And so I just sent a letter to everybody. I knew all my clients and everything. And, you know, I need the money to do this. You know, I can't not work for 2 weeks and not have a cushion. Yeah. The Garden Club gave me $300 to go, which might not seem like a lot, but, you know, microloans help many things happen.
Yep. Push you over.
And then I came back and gave them programs on permaculture. Not a whole lot. I think they got tired of listening to me. But
hey, we're still 20 years later, I think it's a decent return on investment.
But it was so life-changing for me. And I know that they have helped other people in the group.
Right. We've given grants back to Pikes Peak Permaculture to use as scholarships for some of their students. Our current grant program is our applications were due March the 1st, so it's too late right now, but we give them every year. The plant sale that we're coming up will fund next year's grants. So we already have the money in the bank for this year's grants. And we give, we changed the amount to $400 last year, small grants up to $400 for to groups and organizations, not to individuals, to groups and organizations for sustainability, resilience, or beautification of the community. So some businesses have stepped up and wanted to redo beds, put in rain gardens. Mm-hmm. If we don't get a lot of grants, we will decide who we want to give money to. We've given money to the Fountain Creek Watershed Organization. We've given grants to the Palmer Land Conservancy before. Sometimes people are putting in irrigation systems.
Didn't we give one to the pool?
We have. I'm sure we've given money to the pool before. I know that when the pool built the baby pool and they added the beds behind the pool, I worked with an Eagle Scout who was doing plants for the pool, and we donated a lot of leftover plants. We had a lot of catmint and daylilies left over from the plant sale. Plus, I helped advise them on things that they wanted to buy that would be low maintenance and appropriate for that area. And the scouts and the other people there provided the labor to dig the holes and put in, but I helped them place the plants and stuff like that. So, you know, we get different requests from different people. We've given grants. Kelly Bull in her community, she's a permaculturist, did a curb cutting, water saving experiment in her neighborhood based on Brad Lancaster's rainwater harvesting books.
Oh, such a good idea.
Yes. Yes.
Well, preventing deforestation, one curb at a time.
One curb at a time.
And, of course, you have to fight tooth and nail to do some of these things to get around opposition to laws and cities, just like having to fight the rain barrel fight years ago. I used to tell people, oh, Colorado is so weird. You can grow pot in your backyard, but you can't have a rain barrel. Mm-hmm. So now we can have two rain barrels. So that's nice.
Yeah. It is imperative as we look at the next decades and the next century. You know, when we wrote water laws, first of all, plenty of people who are actually in first in time were left out. But we have this first in time, first in right. And the idea from a law standpoint makes some modicum of sense, but it is backwards with nature.
And it's not based on science.
It's not based.
No.
It's based on that point in time. And sure, they hadn't recorded it and they weren't listening to the people who had been on this land for generations and generations. But in doing so, we have to be flexible with the law now. We have to be willing to totally say, yes, this is a, yes, it will slow down and clean the water and it will allow it to stay in a place that will then allow the water cycle to work over where your farm is. This is important. And we're still pretty myopic as a community, but there are pockets that are talking about it. And if there are enough pockets with podcasts, with enough buzz, with enough
example setting.
Yeah, example setting and a way to say like, hey, this way, as you saw from this data, science, it's not working. Try this way. Yes, it might slow down, but guess what? When it comes to your place, it's going to be cleaner and it will stay coming to your place longer and better. So give it a chance.
That was a big difference in learning about. So having a rain barrel is rainwater collecting. But rainwater harvesting is when you get the water to stay in your soil. Mm-hmm. So we use a lot of mulch. Many of the gardens we visited, people mulch their yards, they mulch their lawns, they mulch their gardens. And this allows, when we do get this precious rain, this rain then, instead of running off into the street, like so many of the houses on my block that have made these barren yards of rock.
Zero scaping.
Not zero scaping, but zero scaping that then they ritually spray with poison because weeds inevitably pop up. All of this goes into the watershed. So in my home, I want that water to stay in the ground. And we've had a dry winter. When I planted my peas and I dug down 1 or 2 inches in the soil, even after over an inch of rain, it was still dry 2 inches down. Wow. So this snow is really nice because it melts slowly and really permeates the ground. But it's not going to make up for the whole winter at this time. So we're talking about rainwater harvesting. And again, we're not trying to bludgeon people with so many programs and you have to do this and you have to do that. I really think the strongest thing that we can do is show by example. When we help build a pollinator park, when we're using berms and swales, when new people come to our homes and see. When I teach this course for Valerie Blankenship's class on growing your own food and medicine, I like to send them pictures of what my yard looked like in 2017 when we bought the house. Because it was pretty much barren, and it was just scrubby, you know, some elm trees, which Becky loves, but I had them taken out. We don't agree on everything. But now I'm sure I have over 60 or 70 perennial fruit trees and fruit bushes, herbs, annual produce, things like that, new soil. Everybody says, oh, I can't grow anything. I don't have good soil. Guess what? Nobody here has good soil.
Bring it back to life.
Yeah, bring it back to life. Top it off. Keep topping it off. Every year you're adding. Allie, we talked to you, at your house. How many years have you been there?
I moved in about, 13 years ago, and it was, like you said, very barren. I look back all the time, and I'm like, wow, what a difference.
Yes, and so every year, you're thinking your soil health is going to improve. You hear about industrial agriculture, and that every year the nutrients are leached out of the soil, and every year they're losing topsoil, and every year the soil is diminishing, and the quality of nutrients in our food that you're purchasing at the store is also declining. Well, permaculture helps reverse that because your focus is now the soil, and your focus is what grows here. One of the things I said in the class is permaculture shifted my mindset. Many, many people think about plants in their yards in this way. They think, I want that kind of plant, and I want it in this specific spot. Mm-hmm. And they're thinking about an aesthetic or something they have in their mind from their past, maybe from another even area. My neighbor next door is obsessed with having a green lawn, regardless of how much fertilizer and pesticide he has to use, and water, and to water the lawn. But this is his vision for a yard. That's what a pretty yard is to him. Permaculture shifted my paradigm. So instead of thinking about what I want and where I want it, I now look at the yard, the property, and say, what wants to grow here, and what can I do to support its growth? And sometimes that means even changing what you eat. I never grew up, I never heard of a service berry. I never ate rhubarb. I never ate Swiss chard. I grew up in the Deep South. I knew what turnip greens and mustard greens were. I never ate kale. But now I look, what thrives where I am? And if I'm going to grow it and it's going to grow here, I'm going to learn how to cook it and eat it so that it will nourish me and my family.
I want to say something about elm trees.
Knew that was coming.
You would be interested to know that we just cut down in half elm tree in my backyard. Because you get elm trees around here. They blow around and all. Well, first off, they're edible. And so I work with my elm trees. I don't let them get great big. You know, you can eat them. I actually feed them to my
husband. I know, you've told me this before.
I just cut them up into little pieces. You know, and
with
so...
the bark?
Oh, no, the leaves. The bark. I haven't tried the bark, Rachel.
I don't. You're Becky Elder. Nothing is past possible.
Well, people do use the inside of the bark. It's a medicinal herb. Slippery elm.
Headaches. Oh, I know slippery elm.
Yes.
It's good for voices.
Well, they scrape the inner bark off of this and make it into a powder, and it's supposed to be really good for lots of intestinal things. I think this is what, like, saved George Washington's troops when they were, you know, starving to death or something. But go ahead. Becky.
Well, yeah, and you can take these, like, if you cut down a, like, I have one out front that shades my cars in the summertime, and it's also right under the line. So I've been out there with Michael going, you know, right above that joint, we're going to cut that down. So it's going to grow over the street, but not into the lines. And we'll take that and just leave it laying at the end of the yard there, and the deer will come around and just chow that up, because they love to eat it. They came through, the city came through my neighborhood and cut down all the elms that they could find, and the deer were just like, we're starving here. You can also take those little whips and make waddles with them, which we did at Sunwater Spa. If you look up on the Wild Hill, you'll see these little waddles that are made from the elm trees. So we didn't fight them. We said, you're going to be here, and you know if you keep cutting it down for 20 years, it will probably give up.
Right.
But if it doesn't, you have all these uses for it.
Oh, right.
So elm trees, you know, they are just a fact of life. Might as well eat them. That's the best revenge. It's like, and I haven't tried the bark yet, Rachel, so I don't know. But I don't let them get barky,
everything.
You know. You cut them down when they're still smooth.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and just in defense of elms, with the pollinator project in Manitou, we went on a whole push to keep the city from poisoning the elms. Because, we passed this thing with the help of the Garden Club. And I word out to Mary Ellen Montgomery, who was really the one who pushed it through the city, because she has skills with the city that I don't think anybody else has. But we passed the organic land management policy. And the first thing the city came back with, like 6 months later, is we want to have a waiver so we can go poison all the elms. And half of them are like right on the creek. And it's
the problem is the solution. That is not a viable solution.
Yeah. So anyway.
Well, you had mentioned that with the elms, there's the invasive species aspect of things, but also if something can grow here and other things are faltering, then how do you honor a changing ecosystem?
Right.
And that's, you know, it's worth a discussion. It's worth disagreeing gracefully over. You know, it's all good.
Right.
In my neighborhood, the biggest trees are elms.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, where I'm at.
There are no cottonwoods anymore?
No, they don't. The city doesn't like cottonwoods. The state doesn't like cottonwoods.
Mm-hmm.
Only cottonwoods you can buy legally are
the
sterile.
Sterile.
Cottonwood is my favorite deciduous tree because it can take a beating. It's like an elm. You can see them all contorted and twisted, and they're still growing.
Oh, yeah. My neighbor has three in the backyard. It's the tree that the owls come to visit in and the birds and the crows, the crows, and the leaves. Lots of leaves.
Beautiful. Yeah, they are beautiful. I like your idea, even though I don't have elm trees anymore, thank goodness. I still use all my garden debris to rebuild berms and swales and everything else. And also, if you have raised beds, especially these tall ones, every year by the end of the season, they've dropped about a foot or two of soil as, you know, they've produced plants and everything else, and you have to start all over with them. Well, those are the great places to put all this garden debris that otherwise would be going into the trash. That's where I put my pine needles, pine cones, branches, logs, everything that I can find. And then some of these leaves that we've stolen and everything else all the way up to the top.
So, like, that reminds me of something I was reading just this morning. I'm reading Bill Mollison on, I have to do a program on forestry and trees. And he was talking about, and I just never thought about it, but over the lifetime of a tree, they have done their biomass times however many times into the soil. They literally build the soil beneath them. And when you think about it in terms of biomass, when I think of biomass, like, oh, yeah, look at that big trunk and stuff. But over time, the biomass is enormous. And people, oh, trees are not going to solve climate change. You know, I tend to disagree because trees are something that everybody can do. And if everybody planted a tree a year for the next 20 years, we might actually get some good headway from that in terms of what we're facing.
If we have water management that can meet it, I agree with you.
Well, the forest is a great example of this. You walk on the spongy soil of the forest where the leaves have fallen and deteriorated over the years and support new growth, a fungal community underneath that. And I talked to people. I said, nobody's out there watering the forest.
Right.
There are very few weeds in the forest. And when you find weeds in the forest, they'll be along the pathways because weeds are actually trying to heal the soil. They're pulling up nutrients, and they are, what's the word I'm looking for? They're the word
so
pioneer.
I started calling them primary plants, where they come in first in succession.
Yeah.
And what
primary
are they doing?
Species,
they're covering the soil.
I get that.
There's a great book called The Wild Wisdom of Weeds, and it was written by a Coloradan, Katrina Blair, who lives in around
Durango.
Durango, yes. And I use that a lot in the herbal medicine course because so many of these weeds, she's traveled to many continents in the world, and these same weeds are there, and they follow human development. They follow where we disturb the soil, and then they come in and they colonize the area, they bring up minerals, and they build the way for the native species to come in and then be able to grow up around them. And as they do, the weeds themselves diminish. But in the meantime, most of those weeds are edible and nutritious. You know, again, you do have to be careful if you're going to harvest things like that, that you're not harvesting where people are spraying poisons. That's why some of the weeds that come up in my yard, if we want to eat mallow leaves, if we want to eat dandelion leaves, I don't worry about it because I know we don't spray.
Exactly.
Right. Well, that's a good segue into another question I have then. I was reading that you have a tree voucher program.
Well, the city had the tree voucher program.
Yeah, that was a Manitou thing,
a
garden club thing.
Yeah, not
but
a
we promote it.
Oh,
yeah,
you
absolutely.
Promote it on your website. Okay. So that's still kind of going on,
I don't
on,
know
right?
if it's still going on. I've planted so many trees on my own, I don't have any room for a tree.
Last year, I remember Colorado Springs, like the El Paso County possibly even, did an Arbor Day. Here, get one of these three species, and you can pick them up if you register early before trees are out, and you could literally get a free tree, which was incredible. Mm-hmm. But it was a larger than Manitou thing, so I don't know if Manitou's got absorbed. We'd have to look into it.
Thank you. I know Colorado Springs just put out a tree voucher program. You have to go and look at their map, though, because it's only for a specific region. So it's not really open to all of Colorado Springs, but I hope to see that grow to where we can get more, not just on the south side, but also on the north and the east.
Right. The fire mitigation program is like that. I think it's mostly focused on the west side, and that's where I get free mulch every year. If you leave branches out, you can request that they drop mulch in your yard. But even if you're not part of that, I think there are other ways that you can get mulch. Heck, I've chased down trucks that were cutting down trees in the neighborhood and asked them,
you're so funny.
Do you want your mulch? Can
Manitou
I have
has
it?
Free mulch for Manitou residents.
Yeah. But I like it when you can get somebody to actually just drop it in your yard.
I know. That is great.
Yes. Sometimes I'll give them to you. One guy was like, there are a lot of branches in there. I said, I'll take them. You know, I'll use them for something else. I talked to the people cutting down the tree over the fence. Can I have some of those logs?
They really do. You know, permaculture does kind of label you as the crazy person. For a while, until they see
until
it.
They realize, oh... Like, Jeannie, how often do you water your yard?
Very rarely.
Exactly.
Very rarely.
How often have you watered this winter?
Early on in the winter, I did put out a sprinkler, you know, in the backyard, like maybe once.
I
turned
time.
On my soaker one time.
One time.
Recently because... You know,
awesome.
Yeah, I'm almost at zero. I also collect water religiously. I am absolutely crazy. I have
Jeannie has
milk
buckets.
Jugs. I quit doing some of the buckets.
No more buckets in your shower.
I try to get my. I have two coffee cans and a milk jug in my shower
with
me. I get about 2.5 gallons of clean water. People let the water run all the time while they're waiting for hot water.
Oh, gosh.
You get up in the morning, I want to wash my face with hot water. Well, mm-hmm. it takes over a gallon of water to come out of my spigot before I get any hot water, and I save all of that water. So I have milk jugs by the sink faucet. I collect water in the shower. Nobody in our house regularly takes a bath, but if they did take a bath, it would be like, don't let the water out.
Absolutely
I'm going
not.
In there and I'm scooping it out mm-hmm. and I'm going to water something. I don't worry about soap or anything else.
My husband just shakes his head and walks away and I go,
know.
Thank you.
I go in at night, get ready for bed, and there is water for my husband shaving in the sink. It's in a container, you know, but he forgot to tell me it was there, but that's okay. I will find a plant to throw this on, you know. But I'm saving every precious bit. I actually live on the west side. I'm not in Manitou, but I heard recently that Manitou water bills have just skyrocketed. Mm-hmm. Part of that was because of an error that I think they did something with a new metering system or something like
there,
that. But still, I know people who live like in two people in a house and they're telling me their water bill last month was 180, one said, and one said 140. That's just for the water bill, not even other utilities. Water is very precious in this community. So I water very sparingly. Things have to be like having a near-death experience.
Well, when you think about it, you know, it is a dry area, but to go out and baby your plants doesn't make them stronger.
No.
So I've been, like, we've watered once over the winter, and it's been very dry, but I'm wanting them to stretch. And while we're talking about this, gray water. You're talking about mm-hmm. gray water.
Yes.
And I water all my indoor plants about gray water. I know you have more to say about that. You want to jump in?
That's a gap. We need to fill that because it's mm-hmm. a gap that ends up creating more of a closed-loop system that is really important.
And we're just borrowing or stealing
from the
water.
West side.
Yeah, pumping it from Pueblo, Arkansas
from our
River.
Future. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
That too. And so we have to start thinking, Jeannie, you had mentioned it in the opening of our course, 7 generations. We have to start thinking about that because our children's children are going to have crazy problems if we don't do something now and show these systems can be small. We don't have to use a lot of water, you know, and there are systems too in place to where when you turn on your tap, hot water immediately because it's
right.
circulating. So there are solutions out there
yeah.
for us.
Yeah.
Bringing it back into the garden club, though.
Yes.
See, it's like all about landscape because it's so important. But I want to acknowledge that the garden club just recently, back in 2004, got awarded a Greenie Award through the...
Yes.
2024? 2025? It was within the last 3 years?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
there we go.
Well, the Greenie Awards didn't start until just the last few years. But
so,
I think maybe there's
definitely
we had our first one in 2020. This is from the Manitou Springs Climate Action Working Group.
Right.
The call,
so we had
yes.
the 2020 when we gave it to the CAG because they were the first place in town that was actually doing compostable carry out.
Okay.
I mean, that was what it was, one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then COVID knocked it out.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have another one until, let's see, what is 2026? It would have been 2024? Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what
2024.
I was saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
so,
I just think that's really wonderful that you're being recognized at making a huge impact. I mean, that's something that we need to have more of, and that's why I love doing this podcast and storytelling about what people are doing in the community to help everybody, again, have that resiliency and have a happier life, because growing food is it's amazing. I bet everybody at this table is going to say, I would not go back to lawn, or I would not go back to, you know, wanting to not grow food. It's something that you just continue to go forward with. And how does someone join your club? We direct them to the website, but can you give me a little bit of information about who's welcome? Is it just ladies? I think mentioned there's guys as well.
My husband's a member of the garden club and helps with the plant sale every year. Basically, show up to a meeting. You don't have to join to come to a meeting. Sometimes you want to find out if it's for you. I joined a book club once and decided, I don't like homework. I'm not going to do this. but show up to a meeting, come to our plant sale. We'll have flyers there. You can always, I am the admin of the Facebook page. If you send us a message, I can get back with you. Sometimes people ask, when is your meeting? Our meetings through May will be public, and they will be free. After that, May is a great time. Our calendar year starts in June. Our dues, it only costs $20 to join or $25 for a couple. That's why my husband's a member. Mm-hmm. But it's nice to have joined by June, because then you will be on the email list to come visit our gardens when we have the next 4 months. The plant sale will be over, and we will be relaxing. We will still get to see what people are growing in their gardens, and then it starts up. But you can come at any time.
Yeah. Right, and we meet on the second Thursday of every month at the Community Congregational Church at 6 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And I do happen to know that this next meeting that's coming up just this next week is going to be pretty busy with the agenda.
Yeah.
But I told the president, it's like, look, people want a program, and so we're going to take whatever time is left and do just a conversation about drought and things we can do about drought, and maybe talk about some of these permaculture techniques that we love that we've been talking about. So I think... And I'm preparing notes already to just like, okay, we are going to do this.
Yeah, we need a program. We need a program.
Right.
In our April meeting, we're going to meet an hour early and pot up plants from Elm Avenue. And then the second half of the meeting, we are going to be awarding our grants. By that time, the whole club will have seen copies of the grants, and we will discuss it, and we will award our grants. Our May meeting is usually a potluck, and it's also the last meeting before the plant sale, and we will be discussing pricing and labeling our plants for the sale. We have people bring in samples of what they have grown. Because you do grow a plant, and you wonder, well, what should I charge somebody, you know, for this plant that I have babied now for a long time? And so we give people feedback, but it is up to them to price the plants as they see fit. Ask people, you know, well, what have you seen in nurseries and things like that? We're not trying to compete with nurseries. I still think we make things very affordable.
Right. We are very affordable.
Well, and you will find things at our plant sale that you won't see anywhere else.
That's right.
It's always a surprise to me, too, and I'm in charge of the plant sale.
Got a fig tree coming.
Oh, I have seven fig trees.
Yeah, well, okay. I'm busier than you are.
Who has an American plum? Did any of you have an American plum this year?
No. Somebody gave me some seeds 2 years ago for goose plums, and I put them in a pot, and they've never come up. I doubt they will after this winter either. But, no, I'd love to have some seeds to try to start some.
I have one.
That's one of the...
Wild plums?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's delicious.
I ordered some from a nursery, really small ones that were like $5 a piece. I think I ordered five, and three of them have lived. They're in my yard, but they've never bloomed yet. So I don't even know what they taste like yet.
All in good time.
Yeah.
Well, I love how you all come in together during the summer for different yards, and that's something that I've heard a lot from our students in the design course is, where can I see these things? Where can I, you know, where can I find out a place where I can go and actually see this happening?
Yes.
And we do skill building, and we bring the students into places where they can build, and we do guild and food forest. I know, like, there might be some projects around that you could direct people to, but man, if you just really wanted demonstration, coming to you all's gardens is going to be great if you join the club.
Absolutely. And one of our esteemed male members of the garden club, there's a handful. But the pollinator garden that is on Pawnee that we are starting as a blank slate, and that is the project on the site where the house burned down several years back. You're getting to see permaculture in action from the very beginning. And so going, you know, like anything, it's on a bit of an accelerated timeline, but nature doesn't accelerate. So looking at it and visiting it and taking note, that one's a very easy one to do a slow drive by or get out and look around and see where people are. So if people want to see something in action that's publicly accessible at any time, go to the Manitou Springs Elementary School, look across the street and a little bit up the hill, and it's right there. It's got a gazebo, and they can just kind of take note over the summer and see how things take shape.
Yeah, take a look at how it progresses through the seasons of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah, and eco-tours, if, you know, I've seen some being advertised in Denver, they can be quite expensive sometimes. And so for a $25 membership or $20 membership.
That's, for a year.
Yeah, that's pretty great.
For a year,
access
yeah.
to all of these different variety of growing capabilities.
Yeah. Well, and I think there's a reason for that. It's like we're not after money.
No.
We're after resilience.
Education.
We're after the seven generations and not hurting the future. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's priceless. So
well,
if you want people to come, you don't, like, price them out of it.
And permaculture doesn't give you, here is a one-size-fits-all, go home and do this.
Correct.
But permaculture starts with observing your site and taking slow and small steps. Before I took permaculture, and one of the very first conversations I had with Becky, I had moved to a house, not the same one I live in now, but it was in the foothills, and I was like, oh, you need to come over and tell me what to do and everything. She said, you haven't lived there long enough. You need to live there for 1 year, and you need to watch the sun come up and the sun go down and see where the rain falls on your property, and you need to find out what's already growing there. And so that's really your first step. One of the people who is new to the permaculture class sent me an email after the first class and says, where do I even start? And I was like, start small. Mm-hmm. Don't stress yourself out. Don't go home. You've had 1 weekend of permaculture. Don't go home and dig up your whole yard.
Yeah, no.
I mean, first, start reading. Read some of the text that came with it. Start a diary of what's going on. This is spring. Start a diary right now. When your peach tree blooms, write down what date it bloomed so that next year when it blooms on a particularly different date, you say, oh, it's early, oh, it's later. You start learning what's going on in your yard. When I teach this herbal medicine course about growing your own food and medicine, I tell these people, because some of them live in apartments, condos, big yards, little yards. Some people have land. Some people have property. Said, don't go home and try to grow my garden in your yard. You want to look at what factors affect your yard and your life. Where do you even know where the sun is on the summer and the winter solstice on your property? Where is the sun during the equinoxes? Where's your shade? Walk your yard, not when it's lightning and thundering, but when it's raining. Where does the water flow? Work with what you already have there instead of deciding, I'm going to put an apple tree over there because I think it will be pretty. The apple tree may not want to grow there. You might not even be able to grow one in your yard at all. You might find something, though, that's very productive that wants to grow where you live. So you have to analyze things, and you move slowly, very slowly, and it's cumulative over time.
That's right. We're such an instant gratification society, and we need, this is a good way to get out of that.
Oh, yes. People on my block will go and spend $200 or $300 on annuals to come home and plant, probably full of pesticides and all kinds of things, and put them out, and it looks very pretty for just a little while.
And
then, you know, well, even if it lasts the summer, but then it's done, and they're gone. They don't come back, you know. It's superficial. It's superficial. What wants to thrive? What wants to grow? What's going to help our whole community, our whole environment? What's going to
inspire children?
Right. I love to think about people. I love to give things like strawberry plants to people with little kids. I mean, is there another way that you could turn kids onto gardening by filling your backyard with berries that they can go out and pick? But you would be surprised at how many people are not interested because they think that that's going to be work that they have to do. But people are in different stages of their lives.
That's right.
I mean, if you've got two or three kids and three or four dogs in your backyard, it's going to be really hard for you to...
You need to have a sequestered space.
Yeah. You know, it has to be, it can happen, but you have to take those factors into account.
I do want to mention that as somebody with a full-time teaching job, with a young child, with a bunch of different commitments, I am not a super attentive gardener at this point in my life, but through the garden club, through the design course, through these different things, what I have learned how to do is what Kelly Bowl calls futzing, which is a way of being an informed but you can be a distractible gardener. And so what I've done is, if I, you know, there's a mulch pit with the Colorado Forest Service right on my I-25 corridor drive home. I can get a couple tubs. I can spread that out. Every once in a while over here, I find a plant. Okay, it'll go in. But it's like, if it's longer than, for me, 7 minutes a day, and I'm going to be like, oh, I don't have time for it, which is ridiculous, but also that's just where I am mentally. Mm-hmm. And I've never been a winter waterer. I've never been. I mean, I try and remember to water sometimes with gray water in the summer, but I am a very lazy gardener. But I stuck my finger in part of our, it's Manitou, so it's like all jumbled and Legoed together in this mm-hmm. glorious rock-walled way. But I stuck my finger in where I had planted garlic. And of course, you're supposed to winter water garlic. Didn't get around to it. And I stuck my finger in the thing, and right underneath the mulch, the soil was damp.
The soil was damp.
And it was after mm-hmm. this bone dry winter. I was like, I am doing something right.
Yeah.
This is amazing. So it gives you a gratitude and an optimism when I can turn to my students and say, hey, guys, this is our Earth semester on environmental science. We are going to learn about soil. And then I tell them, listen, I know it's all gloom and doom or whatever, but we could solve climate change with soil.
Right.
We could solve, we can reverse effects. This has the power to do that. And they lean in and go, wait, what? We just thought this was going to be another soliloquy on the futility of it all. It's like, no, that's not the point of this class. but they learn about it, and they learn about the ways that it sequesters carbon. They learn about it, and I think if people can learn how to be either lazy gardeners or contemplative gardeners and allow nature to breathe and to, they pay attention to it and go, what's going to be successful here?
Mm-hmm.
You have solutions and you have optimism, and man, it can be in such short supply that what a gift to people of any age.
You become alive when you go outside.
Yeah.
And when you regenerate the soil, it becomes alive.
Ah, hi, little microbes. Good to see you.
And we need that right now.
I think we
all need a big helping of therapy.
Garden
right
therapy.
Now, garden therapy, mental health. I've spent so much time out of my garden this winter thinking, what else can I do? I need to stay out here and stay off the computer.
Right.
Yeah.
And a lot of these solutions don't appeal to gigantic farms, big ag, corporations, things like that, because they don't cost a lot of money. And they're right in front of our faces, and nobody can make a profit off of them. Mm-hmm. But we profit off of them in our lives, the quality of our lives, the quality of our physical and our mental health. To grow your own food, to harvest that food, to eat your food, to see bees and birds in your yard. And Becky writes a wonderful newsletter that I read every time it comes out about all the little animals and a celebration of life. Mm-hmm. A celebration of life.
And a little whining about Manitou.
Well, I think...
both worthy messages, that's fine.
I think people are searching for a way to have agency in their lives. There are so many problems in this world, and we're almost numb, and we're definitely overwhelmed. And you think, what can I do? And most times people don't know what they can do. But it's like a ripple effect in a pond.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can be the pebble that makes a little ripple that your neighbors look and see, wow, look what they're doing over there. And that person's not doing near as much mowing and weeding and raking and fertilizing and spending as much money as I am. And yet they have a beautiful yard full of pollinators. They're growing food.
And all the birds live there.
And the birds live there.
Well, and the garden club gives you community. And then you, as with the pebble, like you can take that community and you can build different kinds of communities because you had this prototype.
It amplifies what you're doing.
Yeah, it amplifies, exactly.
So take that step. I encourage everyone listening today, reach out to Manitou Garden Club. I'm sure you would love to have another member and another member.
Yeah. Follow us on Facebook, Manitou Springs Garden Club.
Yeah.
That's right. It's a friendly group.
And we'll see you at the plant sale.
Yes, go to the plant sale.
May 24th, 9 to 12, Manitou Pool parking lot.
There you go.
And I wish this was on video today, because the whole time we're just rocking our heads up and down and up and down and agreeing with every single person around this table, because, like-mindedness. And but we're also in the mode to wanting to help everyone else. So that's why we're here today. We're here for you.
And we have found these things to be true that we talk about.
Absolutely.
It's true.
Is there anything anybody else wants to add that I didn't ask that you just absolutely would love to share?
I have a Bill Mollison quote.
Okay, let's hear it.
We are surrounded by insurmountable opportunities. I love that.
Me too.
They're everywhere. They're everywhere. Oh, a Michael Pollan quote.
Eat food, not too much, mostly plants.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's a good one.
That's a good one. We love a good quote.
So this is an excerpt from Why Bother by Michael Pollan. It was written in 2008. And he said, "But the act I want to talk about is growing some, even a little, of your own food. Rip out your lawn if you have one. And if you don't, if you live in a high rise or have a yard shrouded in shade, look into getting a plot in the community garden. Measured against the problem we face, planting a garden sounds pretty benign, I know. But in fact, it's one of the most important things an individual can do to reduce your carbon footprint, sure. But more important, to reduce your sense of dependence and dividedness, to change the cheap energy mind. A great many things happen when you plant a vegetable garden. Some of them directly relate to climate change, others indirect but related nevertheless. Growing food, we forget, comprises the original solar technology. Calories produced by means of photosynthesis. Years ago, the cheap energy mind discovered that more food could be produced with less effort by replacing sunlight with fossil fuel fertilizers and pesticides, with the result that the typical calorie of food energy in your diet now requires about 10 calories of fossil food energy to produce. It's estimated that the way we feed ourselves, or rather allow ourselves to be fed, accounts for about a fifth of the greenhouse gas for which each of us is responsible."
And that's a quote by Michael Pollan?
That's Michael Pollan from an essay called Why Bother.
Thanks for reading that one.
Yeah.
It's radical.
It is.
Radical.
And imperative.
Yes.
Well, thank you three for coming.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. Thank you, Allie.
Thank you. And thank you, listeners, for listening to Peak Environment. Check out all of the community podcasts at studio809communitypodcast.com. Peak Environment is recorded at Studio 809 Podcast, which is inside the Next Us, a cooperative environment for small businesses in downtown Colorado Springs. We would like to acknowledge that the land we are on is unceded territory and the ancestral homeland of the Ute people, who have stewarded this land throughout previous generations, gathering at the base of Tava Kavi, which we call Sun Mountain, and also in our society we call it Pikes Peak, America's Mountain. We also acknowledge these lands were occupied by the Arapaho and the Cheyenne. It's important to recognize and respect the enduring relationships that exist between Indigenous peoples and their traditional homelands, and I encourage you all to engage with these communities.